Yes, this is the Space Show. Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie, and on the panel in Mission Control, we have Richard. On this evening's The Space Show, first we're going to delve into the proposed NASA budget and ask whether Jared Isaacman is dreaming. So, who's Jared Isaacman? Well, he is President Trump's nominee to lead NASA. He's made two private space flights financed by himself. And on April the 9th, he was under questioning by senators in the United States Congress to see if he's going to be the leader of NASA. And also, last Friday, Saturday I think it was our time, the White House announced their proposed budget for the United States government, and in particular, of interest to us, is the proposed budget for NASA. So we're going to be looking at both Isaacman's testimony and at the budget proposal. So during the hearings, Jared Isaacman made some astonishing claims. One of them was that NASA could do both humans to the moon and Mars at the same time.
When we met Matt in my office, you said beating China back to the moon was, quote, critical for our national interests. You also said that if President Trump turns on the television and sees Chinese astronauts on the surface of the moon before Americans, you said you would be fired that day. In your written testimony, however, you said, quote, we will prioritize sending American astronauts to Mars. There seems to be a bit of tension between the commitment you made in my office and your testimony. What is your view? Will you maintain course with the Artemis program so that we can return American astronauts to the moon before President Trump leaves office?
Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate the statement. First, I couldn't agree more with the president and his inspiring and ambitious goal to send American astronauts to plant the stars and stripes on Mars. He didn't say we shouldn't go to the moon. I suspect the president, as I feel and probably a lot of Americans, is what's taking us so long to get back to the moon, and why does it cost so much money? I absolutely want to see us return to the moon. As I mentioned in my prepared remarks, determine the economic, scientific, and national security value while we are also proceeding towards Mars. I don't think we have to make any tough trades here, Senator. I think if we can concentrate our resources at the world's greatest space agency, we don't have to make a binary decision of moon versus Mars, or moon has to come first versus Mars. I think we could be paralleling these efforts and doing the near impossible, which is exactly why the American taxpayers funded NASA in the first place.
Well, I will say on the question of whether NASA has to implement moon, then Mars, United States law is explicit and unequivocal on that. 51 U.S.C. Section 20302, which Senator Cantwell and I wrote, says, vision for space exploration, the administrator shall establish a program to develop a sustained human presence in cislunar space or on the moon as a stepping stone to future exploration of Mars and other destinations. The notion of the moon as a stepping stone is explicitly in U.S. law. Do you acknowledge that?
Yes, I do, Senator.
And let me ask you, given the current NASA budget, if we assume for a moment we're not going to see a dramatic shift and NASA's budget double tomorrow, do you believe it is possible to stand up a full mission to the moon and a full mission to the Mars simultaneously?
Senator, as I mentioned my prepared remarks, I think we can absolutely do that. We can figure out the space economy in low Earth orbit. We can run more scientific missions. This is the agency that went from sending Alan Shepard on a suborbital mission, and 8 years later, we saw Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin on the surface of the moon. Do I think that we can get back to the moon, chart a course for Mars, and do all the other things? Absolutely, Senator.
Jared Isaacman, the nominated administrator, that means boss, of NASA. Well, as I listened to that, I thought of the Australian movie The Castle, where playing Daryl Kerrigan, actor Michael Carton says,
"Tell him he's dreaming."
"Yeah,
he was dreaming."
He repeated this claim when asked about likely cuts to the NASA budget.
"And you suggested here and there that NASA can pursue the Artemis program or a mission to the moon and a potential Mars mission in parallel tracks, is how you've been describing it. I'm concerned, though, about the possibility of achieving that while we expect budget cuts to NASA. We've already seen it's cuts, and somewhat significant cuts, I would argue, to staff at NASA. So my question for you is, do you agree that budget cuts would undermine that vision that you are expressing?"
Well, Senator, I think right now NASA has a pretty extraordinary budget. I believe it's close to every federal law enforcement agency combined times two. With that budget and those resources available, I do believe we can do the near impossible. I think we can have multiple flagship scientific missions at once, which means we can have multiple space exploration missions at once and try and solve the space economy in low Earth orbit, sir.
Even with budget cuts, you'll be able to do that?
Well, Senator, I'm not familiar with what what's potentially being contemplated, but I will absolutely do the most with the resources available to try and deliver on NASA's world-changing mission, sir.
So given I think it's pretty clear we're likely to see constrained budgets, how do you envision speeding up our timeline for the Mars mission that you talked about while also ensuring that Artemis is properly resourced and protected from any future cuts that may come their way?
Well, Senator, I think across the board, we have to acknowledge, as I mentioned in our opening remarks, we do have problems here. Presidents have called for return to the moon and a path to Mars since 1989. We spent a lot of money, and we haven't gotten this crew around the moon, let alone landing on it. If I'm confirmed, I absolutely am going to roll up my sleeves and get in the trenches with the best and brightest and figure out where we have our program challenges, what's impeding progress, clear those obstacles, and get back to delivering on the mission. If we can do that, then we're going to get the inspirational side of NASA going, we're going to get the STEM side growing, and the next generation is going to grow up and want to reach even farther, sir.
Tell him he's dreaming.
Yeah,
he was dreaming.
Since Jared's comments on April the 9th, Trump's proposed NASA budget has been published. Space Association President Michael Abdullah has summarized the budget for The Space Show.
Space Association of Australia's Michael Abdullah has summarized the highlights of the budget proposal. The Trump administration's fiscal year 2026 NASA budget proposal emphasizes human space exploration, most notably accelerated missions to the Moon and Mars, while imposing deep cuts on science, Earth studies, and education programs. It allocates over $7 billion for lunar exploration and $1 billion for new Mars initiatives, reflecting a focus on, quote, simultaneously pursuing exploration of the Moon and Mars, end quote. The proposal would retire NASA's heavy-lift space launch system and Orion capsule after Artemis 3, cancel the Lunar Gateway Station, and terminate the Mars sample return mission. It shifts many capabilities to commercial providers and international partners. The proposed budget sharply refocuses NASA on beating China back to the moon and on crewed Mars missions, while cutting or ending what the administration deems lower priority programs for reasons, quote, fiscal responsibility, end quote. These programs would be Earth science, climate satellites, advanced propulsion, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics outreach, etc. The proposal cuts NASA's total funding by approximately 24.3%, from about $24.8 billion in fiscal year 2025 to roughly $18.8 billion in fiscal year 2026. This more than $6 billion reduction is the largest single-year cut in NASA history. Incidentally, space advocates note this would return NASA's budget to 1980 levels after inflation. In summary, the fiscal year 2026 budget proposal signals a major reprioritization, namely a dramatic pivot toward crewed Moon and Mars missions under a lead in space banner and large cuts elsewhere. It sets the stage for intense debate. NASA supporters in Congress and the science community will lobby to restore funding, while the Trump White House will push its focus on cost savings and human exploration goals. The final outcome will hinge on that political negotiation in the coming months. Incidentally, Trump has proposed the National Science Foundation have its funding cut by $4.9 billion, from $8.8 billion to $3.9 billion, a 55.8% reduction.
One of the drivers of congressional support of NASA is the desire to beat China in low Earth orbit and get humans on the moon. Senator Duckworth pressed him on that issue.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As ranking member of the Aviation and Space Subcommittee, I am looking forward to getting a bipartisan NASA reauthorization done to make sure that NASA is able to execute its mission with a consistent vision and congressional support, free of undue influence from any temporary government employees. According to the Global Counterspace Capabilities Report published this month, the PRC is rapidly advancing a broad spectrum of counterspace capabilities as part of a sustained push to secure military power in orbit and expand their presence in space. The PRC has also started building its second satellite internet constellation in lower Earth orbit and has committed to continued human presence in LEO at its Tiangong space station. More than ever, NASA's missions need to be consistent and laser focus and avoid major subversions of mission priorities and diversion of funds, not only for our global space leadership, but also for national security. Mr. Eisenman asked you a couple of yes-no questions, but first I just want to say that a sustained human presence in low Earth orbit is crucial for advancing scientific research, testing technologies for future deep space missions, and fostering a thriving economy and global leadership. As LEO serves as a unique environment for research, development, and training due to its microgravity environment. By supporting extended human operations in LEO, NASA can test exploration systems, conduct human research, and maintain operational expertise, vitals for missions on the moon and to Mars. These are not things that can be done by machine alone, and a gap in our human presence in LEO will likely result in ceding our leadership to the PRC. Mr. Isaacsman, do you support maintaining continuous human presence in low Earth orbit?
I do, Senator. I think if reusability has given us anything, it's a very affordable path to send American astronauts to and from low Earth orbit.
Thank you. Elon Musk has suggested that the International Space Station's strategic value has run its course and should be deorbited as soon as possible to focus on a mission to Mars. For the last 26 years, the strategic value of the International Space Station has been invaluable, serving as a beacon of the United States' global leadership and a symbol of what we can accomplish through international cooperation. Funnily enough, although I don't think it's very funny at all, SpaceX has been awarded the contract to deorbit the International Space Station. Mr. Isaacsman, do you believe there's still utility in maintaining a U.S. presence on the ISS at least through 2030 as currently planned?
Senator, as I mentioned in my prepared remarks, I think we need to use up every bit of life that's remaining on the International Space Station so we can crack the code on the space economy and better hand off those responsibilities to commercial industry. I am familiar with Mr. Musk's remarks in that. I do think he is a very accomplished entrepreneur. I would like to understand his rationale behind that, just as I think, you know, Administrator Webb would want to hear from all of the commercial contract leaders from the 1960s during the space race.
But you don't think that we should deorbit the ISS now?
I do not think we should deorbit it now. I think we need to make the most use of the space station while we have it and figure out what we can accomplish in the unique environment of microgravity and figure out the space economy for commercial LEO.
Thank you. The Artemis program is critical in our effort to return to the moon, and returning to the moon is seen as a stepping stone for broader human exploration and critical for scientific discovery, advancing technology, and as a necessary preparation for eventually progressing to human mission to Mars. I know a few of my colleagues already today have tried to get a specific answer out of you, but you have avoided directly answering them today. So I ask again, Mr. Isaacsman, do you support maintaining NASA's long-term mission to maintaining NASA's long-term mission to maintain a human activity on the moon?
Senator, I'm sorry if I'm not sounding clear on this. I think it's imperative that we do both. I think that's what NASA was created to do. I would love nothing more than to see this crew get around the moon, for us to land on the moon, figure out its scientific, economic, national security value, while we were also charting a course in line with President Trump's vision for American astronauts to plant the stars and stripes on Mars.
So you think we can do both simultaneously?
I mean, we do multiple flagship scientific missions at NASA. We maintain a presence in LEO, where we're undertaking dozens of scientific experiments at once. I think we can, ma'am.
You think we can maintain a mission, a presence on the moon and a mission to Mars simultaneously?
I think we can do the moon and Mars and beyond.
The Gateway is a space station that is being built, yes, it's actually being built right now, to orbit the moon. So what is Isaacman's view of this project?
So the statute is written in the disjunctive. It gives the choice of either the surface of the moon or cislunar orbit. What is your view on the Gateway project?
Senator, that's an area that if I'm confirmed, I would love to roll up my sleeves and get further understand what's working right, what are the opportunities the Gateway presents to us, and where are some of the challenges? Because I think the Gateway is a component of many programs that are over budget and behind schedule, sir.
So you're describing Gateway as over budget and behind schedule. I will say there's a long history in NASA of administrations coming in and canceling programs and causing massive delays. Barack Obama did that with a Constellation, and NASA struggled for years as a consequence. As administrator, are you going to cancel the Gateway program?
Senator, I have no intention as of now to say that I would cancel any program. I need to, if I'm confirmed, get in the job and understand where things are at. I want to assure you and this committee that I want to see America win and succeed and lead in space, whether that be the moon, Mars, low Earth orbit, and beyond. I do not want to see us come in second place, and I certainly don't want to see the right-hand side of that poster you put up, sir.
The Trump's budget proposes to cancel Gateway despite international participation.
Legacy Human Exploration Systems. Minus $879 million. The budget phases out the grossly expensive and delayed Space Launch System rocket and Orion capsule after three flights. Space Launch System alone costs $4 billion per launch and is 140% over budget. The budget funds a program to replace Space Launch System and Orion flights to the moon with more cost-effective commercial systems that would support more ambitious subsequent lunar missions. The budget also proposes to terminate the Gateway, a small lunar space station in development with international partners, which would have been used to support future Space Launch System and Orion missions.
The question of what to do with the International Space Station was raised by several senators. Built over a period of 20 years, current plans are to deorbit it in 2030 using a tug supplied under contract with SpaceX.
Now, I would note in the first Trump administration, there were those in the administration pushing to deorbit the International Space Station prematurely. Given that we've invested over $100 billion in the station, I think that would be profoundly foolish to give up on that investment as long as it is safe to continue using it. After the administration floated this idea multiple times, the United States Senate passed legislation that I authored, 100-0. Every Republican and every senator came through committing that we would maintain the International Space Station at least until 2030 as long as it is safe and scientifically feasible. Will you commit to follow the law and not deorbit the space station before 2030?
Senator, I will absolutely commit to follow the law, and I think we need to maximize the return the taxpayers have invested in that orbital laboratory, use every bit of time we have to crack the code on the space economy and give commercial LEO destinations a fighting chance when they inevitably take over, sir.
NASA astronaut Don Pettit has recently returned from 7 months living aboard the International Space Station. A few days ago, he was asked for his opinion on the longevity of the station.
We'll go back to our phone bridge with a question from Ryan Caton with NASAspaceflight.com.
Thank you.
So the ISS has grown and expanded over the last 20 years. Was it also kind of bittersweet, considering that it's going to be deorbited in approximately 5 years' time? Thank you.
I'm a firm believer we don't need to dump space station in the ocean in 2030 if we don't want to. If we as a society decided to keep space station, we could keep it like a B-52. I mean, how many years has that thing been flying? It'll be flying close to 100 years by the time the Air Force finally retires the B-52. And it's basically the same airframe with the same aerodynamics, but everything else is new. And there's no limit to what we could do to space station except for our will to keep refurbishing it and having the funding necessary for doing it. And one example of that is with our solar panels. The current solar panels needed the space shuttle to put them on orbit, and solar panels have a finite lifetime. They're degrading, and we've got new sets of solar panels. NASA engineers working with the contractors, aerospace industry, figured out how to make new solar panels that could launch on a Dragon vehicle, much less mass, much less volume than the initial ones, and we just kind of roll them out over the existing solar panels. So you use all the guidance system, all the gimbaling, all the electrical wiring, all the stuff from the old solar panels, you just kind of roll out a new one over the old one. And what a creative piece of engineering to be able to do that. And it just shows that hey, we're running low on power. We figured out a way to get more power. We just revamped our radiators. It's a way to get rid of power on orbit, because if you can't get rid of power, you're in a vacuum. You're going to heat up, and you need to have a way to get rid of all the power that you're generating. And we just revamped our radiators during this last mission, and we can keep station going for as long as we want to keep it going. That's my opinion.
That's Don Pittard, who's just come back from the International Space Station. Those are his personal views. He was expressing them in a NASA press conference. But here is what Trump's proposed budget says.
International Space Station, minus $508 million. The budget reflects the upcoming transition to a more cost-effective commercial approach to human activities in space as the space station approaches the end of its life cycle. The budget reduces the space station's crew size and onboard research, preparing for a safe decommissioning of the station by 2030 and replacement by commercial space stations. Crew and cargo flights to the station would be significantly reduced. The station's reduced research capacity would be focused on efforts critical to the Moon and Mars exploration programs.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Where you're listening to The Space Show. The United States plans to have several commercial space stations that NASA, universities and private companies could rent space aboard. The concern is that the International Space Station will be deorbited before these new commercial space stations are in orbit. That would leave a gap with no United States astronauts in space.
So I want to ask you again, because you've said you'll follow the law, are you committed to a sustained human presence in cislunar space or on the moon? And that is federal statute.
Senator, if that is the law, then I'm committed to it.
Okay. All right, let's talk LEO. The International Space Station is managed at a Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas. NASA is planning to retire the ISS by 2030, replacing it with one or more commercially developed space stations funded partially by NASA and partially by outside customers. Unfortunately, both NASA and commercial replacements are behind schedule. Do you agree that we cannot have a gap period between the ISS and its successor when there would be zero human U.S. presence in low Earth orbit?
I do agree, Senator. We cannot cede low Earth orbit to the Chinese.
We're looking at Isaacman's testimony, the proposed administrator for NASA. And with cuts to NASA's budget threatened, the question is, what will happen to NASA's extensive Earth science research and data trove? So here's what Isaacman had to say about that.
And I want to turn to one more specific question. From monitoring sea level rise to polar ice loss to wildfires, NASA's satellites are the backbone of climate research used by scientists, policymakers, and the public across the globe. NASA's Earth Observing System collects and archives more than 147 terabytes of data each day. This data underpins climate action efforts at every level of the government, and it drives global research collaborations, and it informs life-saving disaster response. It's a public good, yet the Trump administration is seeking to undermine that. A recent investigation found that large swaths of climate data sets, visualizations, and web tools, once publicly accessible, have been altered or taken down. This unprecedented rollback of public information compromises scientific continuity and transparency at a time of accelerating climate threats and extreme weather events. If confirmed, will you commit to fully restoring and maintaining access to data, as well as resisting any political pressure to sideline climate research at NASA?
Senator, I can tell you I am very passionate about the Earth Sciences Division inside of NASA, especially with respect to anything that has impact on human life and the financial repercussions for remediating things such as wildfires, landslides, flooding. Earth Sciences also plays a big role in near Earth asteroid protection.
Will you make a commitment to restore all of that information so that it's available to the public? It's vital scientific information.
Senator, I've not been made aware of any information that's not being provided. I mean, I'm just not familiar with any of these changes, Senator.
I'm very disappointed in your question. All this information is vital to getting the information into the hands of scientists and ultimately ordinary citizens.
And those were the comments of Jared Isaacman, the NASA administrator, proposed, still not yet official.